You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful week. Today, I'm back with another interview, and so why don't we get right into it? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Jessica. I recently graduated from Trinity Western University nursing program with a minor in music. I started in 2020 September, and the program went on till 2025 April. It would have been a four-year program, but it did end up being a five-year program due to COVID and all the other miscellaneous things. And on top of that, my minor degree. So yeah, I'm currently also working as a part-time research coordinator for UBC ELCHA, which is also called Center for Healthy Aging.
All right. Thank you for coming, Jessica. I hope you're having a great start of the summer, although you did mention that you have quite a bit going on, like you just mentioned. But I want to get into your journey into nursing. And to begin with, I want to know what first sparked your interest in nursing. How did it all begin? And what specifically drew you into this field?
All right. So I will say I grew up with my father as a surgeon and an ENT doctor. So that being said, I grew up near medical professionals quite a bit, and there are other healthcare professionals in our family as well. That being said, healthcare was something that was familiar to me, and it was a stable job choice when it honestly came to choosing a degree that will give me a job right away after graduation. In nursing, you can also go into so many fields. You can choose to go into pediatrics, maternity. You could choose to go into research. You could also choose to just become a professor, do your master's and PhD and all that. So there are just multiple routes when it comes to nursing. And I knew that it wasn't just about being the standard nurse in the hospital with in a specific mold, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I found that pretty interesting. But yeah, I think the job security aspect really sparked my interest to begin with. But I also am an extrovert and I love seeing people. I love talking to them. And I love helping them out. While you could say that helping people is like an aspect of like literally every job in the world, I really enjoyed that whatever I'm studying right now is going to be put into effect right away into helping others. And that would motivate me to study even harder. So there were many things about that. And I just really found that every aspect of I imagined that every aspect of the nursing curriculum would be purposeful towards patient care. So yeah, these are some things that sparked my interest. And I'm glad I chose nursing as my undergrad degree.
Awesome. I mean, I think that's a really interesting point is because for me, at least, I'm not into this medical field and I don't have a lot of access to it. And so to hear that all these different avenues that are available in this degree of nursing is very insightful to hear about. I want you to go back, way back into your first day of nursing school. What was that like? What kind of memories spark you? And what really just comes to mind?
All right. I think a lot of nursing students would probably be able to relate to this, but I was quite a bit of a perfectionist back in high school. I wanted all my A's and all these things. So as I was entering nursing, I was thinking, okay, I want to be a perfect student. I want everybody to be impressed by whatever I'm doing. I cannot make any mistakes. I will be very nice to everybody, like all sorts of these things. So I just remember feeling very cautious not to make any mistakes. And I was really excited, honestly, as well. What else was there? Oh, yeah. And I remember our professors looking at us and telling us these. And we have about 60 people in our program. People are the ones that you'll be spending 4 years with, cry with, and all these things. And I look around and all I see are like strangers pretty much physically. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, dear, I don't know how I'm going to become friends with these people. But 4 years passed and here we are all. So it was, I'm guessing that first year, especially on the first day, I was feeling pretty cautious and nervous and excited like many others would. Yeah.
I'm curious. So Do you guys all have a small cohort together that you, where you take all the same courses and you guys all have the same schedule, or does everybody kind of have a different schedule with their own?
I'd say so how it works is that we have about 60 people in our cohort, and a lot of the lectures, for example, the classrooms cannot fit in more than like 30. So we would have to switch into section A and B, and then there would be like a morning class and an afternoon class where you just sign up for whatever that fits your schedule. As for the lab classes, which is about like maximum 10 people per class or maybe like 8, that's where we learn the practicality. So it's a classroom. You walk in and there are about 8 hospital beds with the machines and whatever you need. And there are fake mannequins sitting on the bed, or lying down on the bed, I guess. And you can practice on these mannequins. And when we're practicing, my guess is that the professors want to take a bit of a closer look at you, just because these practical skills are important and they want to make sure that you're doing it right. So that's how the lab classes are a lot more of a smaller portion. Other than that, yeah, yeah, I will say there are times where this girl, I've never seen her in my section. We're never in the same lab, never in the same clinical group. So we would just never end up speaking to each other throughout like the entire 4 year, but still know of each other because we still are in somewhat close proximity. We're all in the same program. So yeah, but it is a pretty tight-knit group. My schedule, apart from a lot of other students, deviated a little bit just because I had a music minor on top of that and a lot of other extracurriculars. But yeah, even myself, I felt like I had a lot of overlaps with lots of other nursing students throughout the program. So that was pretty cool.
So the closest I've ever been within this medical field, I guess you can call it, is when I took biology 12 in high school. There's a lot of material to cover there, but I can't imagine how much material you guys have to go through. And I'm wondering, was that at all an obstacle for you in really creating these friendships and tight-knit communities within your cohort? How did you balance the workload? How was that like for you?
I will say, in that sense, I think a lot of students really try to help each other out. It really helps to have like a friend or two that you could count on to be like, okay, question me everything right before the exam. I like to study by myself just so that I have all the information retained in my brain, and then we can sort of chat about it to consolidate the information later with friends. But I wouldn't say that the competition or like the hard subjects themselves necessarily like are like barriers to us becoming good friends or like a tight-knit community. It's more so just that most of the subjects, I would say, are not conceptually difficult. They're not conceptually difficult, as in like it's easy to understand what's going on. There's just a lot of information because, again, this is a 4-year job training basically. And if you've ever been in any sort of a job training, you would know there's a lot of information to retain. You learn over time, but there's something you learn by textbook. There's something you learn over theory. There's something that's just being thrown at you. Like Trinity really tries to incorporate the Christian faith and spirituality aspect into the program as well. So that being said, a lot of that aspect being there, we also had to take like extra Bible classes and all that just so that we could fulfill Trinity Western University's requirement. So that being said, it's just a lot. Not that it's difficult, but the quantity. So time management was really important. So I found that I was going a little bit into like my own world thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to have to lock in. I don't have time for socializing with all these students or else. Yeah, I would say it's different for everybody. There definitely are times where being social and having a lot of other friends to talk about exam questions with and share Quizlets with is definitely like beneficial. And yeah, there definitely are times where community is beneficial, but there are times where a lot of students would just study alone and get really, really good grades too. So it really depends on the person, yeah, I'd say. But the competition itself, I don't think it really came from the grades themselves. Yeah, I really don't think so. Yeah.
So when you're learning, I think it goes you know, two ways. It's either the quantity is insanely huge or the quality of the work is so complex, it just takes you so long to really understand it before you even begin. In terms of quantity, was there a method that you use specifically to really deal with that? Because, you know, you guys are students, so there's exam dates. So I'm assuming that you guys have to learn a specific amount of material within a specific time frame. And so did you use any specific methods that helped with you kind of retain and really get yourself to learn all that material?
I will say there are a couple methods that I've used, but studying in nursing school is a little bit different from high school in a sense that in high school, I had everything written down on a piece of paper and I knew if I memorized this piece of paper, I would get 100% on the exam. Whereas in nursing school, first few weeks, we did all our textbook readings just line by line. We were very meticulous in doing all of those and making our notes, only to realize that this is a little too much for us to do. And only way to do it is condense it and figure out what works the best for me. So what worked best for me was reading over the PowerPoint slides first, getting the information sort of like outlined in myself first, and then watching the pre-recorded lecture. And yeah, my own method for honestly following up with everything was just I had a list of scheduled tasks that I needed to finish that I would finish with the deadlines. And making sure that I don't overload myself with other commitments. There was one semester where I was working about 3 part-time jobs and a student leadership position and all these other things. And I realized, I'm not carving out enough time for my actual nursing studies and my grades might need to suffer for that semester. So it's just honestly based on our discretion. If you are a full-time student who's only dedicated to nursing in your studies, I wouldn't say it might be a huge problem for you to follow up. But the reality is a lot of students who choose to go into nursing have other commitments. University tuition is expensive. You have to work. A lot of us had kids. I know a nursing student who gave birth in the middle of the semester. That was wild. And she came with her baby. And there were some people who were moms. A lot of the students are married already and have their families. So just having to juggle all that must have been really difficult for them. For me, it was the extracurriculars. So that hopefully provides a little bit of a perspective in if anybody wants to pursue nursing in the future, yeah.
No, I actually relate to you a lot. Extracurriculars are a great way to really give yourself a break and kind of move you away from all that pressure in academia and just studying. I think it's really interesting that you kept your violin extracurricular continuing on to your undergrad. What do you think was the value and the effect that, you know, continuing on with your violin had on you? And do you maybe want to continue this extracurricular throughout?
Yeah, so piano and violin, I've been playing since I was really little, since I was about 5-6 years old. And it's always been a part of myself. And honestly, I'll likely talk about this later, but nursing is although I say that it isn't a competition, the reality is it's a degree that helps you realize that you're not perfect and that you're not the best and that you can be wrong in many aspects. And I'd say like it tears down your ego to a sense, and sometimes it can really have an effect on your self-esteem and who you are as a person. And moving away from that, violin was somewhere I could just relax in. Playing in an orchestra with other people together It was honestly like such a nice experience. And I also ended up picking up a viola mid-semester because why not? I like trying new things. And I ended up being the concert lead. I ended up being in a leading position for my section for viola as well. So just having something else to sort of fall back on and really like refresh yourself, like what you mentioned, is really cool. And I do hope to continue on with violin gigs here and there. Like I still do in a sense that I accept wedding gigs and funeral gigs and all these things. It really refreshes my soul in a sense. I also took a course called digital recording at some point during the semester as part of the requirements. And that was a really cool part because I got to edit all the music all together, write my own song. And put all the music in like the MIDI, which is called like musical interface digital something, digital interface, something like that, some sort of technical terms. But that being said, I really enjoy other creative aspects of music as well. Not sure of how that will incorporate into my career, as I'm currently just teaching violin for kids part-time in a studio. But yeah, hopefully in the future, something might come up. And even if not, it's still like a nice hobby to have in the sideline and to bless other people with my talents. So that's been pretty cool.
What kind of genre do you usually perform in?
Classical is, well, I was trained classically, but I grew up in a church, so old hymns that old people really like, I'll play them in nursing homes at times, and they really, really, really like them. But anything else, honestly, whatever they give me, whatever music they give me, I play it. And if I need extra training, I'll watch a couple videos on that. But at this point, yeah, it's mostly, I'd say it's mostly classic and contemporary. Yeah.
I want to go back to your point in how nursing school kind of teaches you that you are not the best and we all have flaws. And I think I definitely felt that when I transitioned from high school to university, and I definitely saw a lot of students struggle with this realization. Was there a mindset that really helped you kind of push through this obstacle for you? And when you found out this realization, how did you deal with it?
Okay. So there was a time in my second semester in nursing school. It would actually have been first semester of my second year. A lot of my courses were known to be quite easy, and I had a lot of extracurricular things going on at the moment. I was TAing for a class, I was working part-time, volunteering the church, a ton of these things happening, which they're all great things. But unfortunately, that meant that I didn't leave enough time for myself to practice in the labs. And my skills testing, which is a form of testing my hands-on skills in front of the prof. It's actually like pretty scary if you want to know about it. You walk into a room, there's one or two profs staring at you while you talk to yourself like, "Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm your student nurse." You talk to the mannequin, but like your prof is still watching, making sure that you're doing everything right within the within a certain time frame. And that you didn't break sterility, for example, like I accidentally grabbed a water bottle that I shouldn't have grabbed and that was counted as docked marks off as, you broke sterility, you got to try again. And it's embarrassing having to tell your peers, oh my goodness. And at the time, I think about half the people failed the skills eval, but it's just kind of embarrassing sometimes to say, oh my goodness, I failed at something. It's not an entire course that I failed, but I still failed at something and I have to redo something and it's going to take longer time. And honestly, what came to a realization for me was that you just have to be able to do it. You don't have to be a perfect person, but you just have to be able to do it just so that you're able to serve your patients better. Because honestly, you have to be a safe nurse. Nobody wants to go to a hospital and be treated by a nurse who's going to be fumbling with her supplies and poking the wrong thing or grabbing the wrong thing and accidentally causing an infection to a patient that shouldn't have an infection there. So those were some realizations that I had to have. It wasn't about me, but it was really about the patients that I will be serving and how can I be better for them? How can I meet the standards so that I can love them the way that I'm called to love them, honestly, was. And when I started shifting the gaze more towards that, and definitely getting help from like some other friends too for a little bit of a pep talk, like you can do this. So I think that was honestly how I got through things most of the time. And what were some other aspects? I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, it's a continuous realization because you have to give yourself a mini pep talk, like you can do this, you can do this. And then something happens and you're like, oh, darn it, I can't do this anymore. And then you have to raise yourself again and say, no, 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 you can do this. You're still in the program. See, nobody kicked you out yet. Come on, you can still succeed in nursing school. It's okay. And I finished. So yeah, it's honestly just a repeated time. You just stand up again. You have to sit back down at times, but and you'll eventually get through, honestly. So I just want to send a word of encouragement out there to any nursing students who may already be in the program to not give up on yourself, and that you can be a great nurse. Anybody can be, really.
I think one interesting thing that you just mentioned is you said you talk to the mannequins like they're real patients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, is there a certain language protocol that you guys have to learn as nurses?
Okay,
like
so
the way you speak to them.
So most of the time, you walk into the room, they have to they make us watch this video called Mosby's videos, which is basically like a random patient who's probably like an actor and other actors. They're basically acting out a certain scene so that we're able to see what's happening and then follow through. So it sort of looks like you walk into the room, you say, "Hi, my name's Jessica. I'm your student nurse." Or if you're an actual nurse, you say, "I'm your nurse and I'll be taking care of you today. What's your name and date of birth?" So that you can confirm their actual identities. Their name and date of birth should be on their wristbands as a patient, though. So if they don't say their names correctly, they can also indicate that they might be confused, having an episode of delirium, confusion, or like potentially dementia. It's a common thing for me to go in and say, "Hi, what's your name? What's your date of birth? And where do you think you're at right now?" And if they say, "Oh, whatever hospital," "Okay, do you know why you're here?" And then they'll tell you. If they're able to answer all the questions correctly, then you go back to your nursing station later and chart that they're alert and oriented times 4, which means that they were able to answer all 4 questions correctly and that they're aware of the situation. Whereas some of the patients, they are not sure. Some of them might say, I'm sitting in the middle of UBC right now. And it's not that you have to like deny them right away. You can say, "Oh, okay, all right." But then you'll have to go back and chart patient unaware of where their surroundings, which is part of their orientation. And it's important, especially if they were completely fine the day before. And if they're having acute changes in their mental status now we're going to have to suspect, is there confusion going on? Is there infection going on? And it can really reflect upon their medical statuses. So just checking how they're doing, their attention status or alert and oriented level, I think is probably the most protocol-ish thing that you can think of. Other than that, if you're going to be doing something on them, you raise a bed to your waist height just so that you're not overstepping and breaking your back in the process. Yeah, but introducing yourself properly is important. Definitely do hand hygiene. So like either alcohol swab in your hand or washing your hand before you go into a patient's room, before and after, is really important. And a lot of the patients, just because they've been in the hospital for a while, or the mannequins, I guess. I refer mannequins as patients because patients are mannequins, mannequins are patients. We try to treat mannequins like our real patients, but we try to have our gloves on when we talk to the mannequins as well, so that if we need to touch anything, we don't know what infection, whatever infectious disease they're dealing with. So it's just best to be safe. If they're already dealing with COVID or some sort of a droplet precaution-ish disease, then we have to wear our gowns, our goggles. They're called PPE, which stands for personal protective equipment. Whether you need to wear them or not, it should stay on at the probably by the door. So, yeah. That's how we were taught to talk to the mannequins, as if we're talking to the real patients. Yeah.
All right. Before we get into the depths of nursing school, let's get through some ads and some PSAs, and we'll get right back into the episode. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
Hey, what's that song from that movie?
Every other Wednesday at 6 p.m., join me, Logan the Extra.
And me, Movie Maverick Mike, as we discuss popular songs featured in movies, or popular movies that feature songs.
On That Song from That Movie, we talk about how the song fits into the movie, why they chose the song they did,
and we'll share our expert opinions on the art of music and movies.
So if you find yourself asking, "I wonder what that song from that movie is," check us out every other Wednesday at 6 to 6:30 p.m.
Or you can listen to all our episodes on citr.ca. Who knows, maybe we talked about that song or movie that you love.
We are That Song from That Movie every second Wednesday at 6 p.m. or anytime at citr.ca.
Everything that has bound this couple is now unraveling before us. This April 17th and 18th at 7 p.m. at Left of Main, James Kudelka's Half an Hour of Our Time is a duet that is dense with incident, performed entirely in silence. James Kudelka's Half an Hour of Our Time was originally commissioned by Moon Horse Dance Theater in 2008 and performed by Claudia Moore and Dan Wild. This 30-minute duet was primarily influenced by Jean Cocteau and Francis Poulenc's one-act opera, La Voix Humaine. Among today's most versatile and innovative dance artists, Kudelka has choreographed for leading ballet companies and smaller contemporary troupes. This presentation is a rare opportunity to witness his work in an intimate setting. Visit plasticorchidfactory.ca for more information. DOXA, Western Canada's largest documentary film festival, returns to present the 24th edition from May 1st to the 11th. DOXA will screen a roster of timely and thought-provoking documentaries in theatrical venues across the city, bringing filmmakers and audiences together for an engaging cinema experience. The 2025 lineup showcases 39 features, 30 short and mid-length films, and industry events. Screenings will take place at the Vancouver Playhouse, the Cinematheque, VIF Center, and SFU Goldcore Center for the Arts. Head to doxa.ca to grab your tickets and explore all that DOXA has to offer this May.
Storytelling is powerful. Our stories carry personal and collective histories, build bridges of understanding, and shine light on unseen truths. Your story, your voice, your power. CITR and Discorder is excited to announce the release of 5 unique podcasts as a part of its Power and Voice podcast incubation program. Power and Voice is an entry-level educational program created by CITR to surpass traditional barriers to entry into the medium of spoken word radio and podcasting. The result is a series of podcasts demonstrating a wide diversity of work in genre, structure, and content. Tune in every day from April 14th to 18th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. to hear Power and Voice storytellers share their stories on their own terms and in their own words.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. We're just going to be continuing on with our interview with Jessica. So I'm just going to ask you, what is something that you didn't expect in nursing school that really just struck you as very surprising?
Again, I will probably say that the most surprising thing about nursing school, I thought nursing was more about, hi, I'm going to give you medication and I'm going to, like, maybe, I don't know, put Band-Aids on you. I did not think it was a lot of heavy physical work. A lot of people did tell me that you were on your foot all the time and all these things. But yeah, my very first semester, we had to practice these on mannequins. But before that, we also had to watch videos of us doing it. There's something called patient bathing. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't think I need to do these bathe myself, but yes, I do. So I would have to walk into the patient's rooms, and it's very intimate. And I didn't actually think that these patients would be okay with me, like, taking off their gowns, bathing them, like, seeing their inside outs and whatsoever. But it is the reality that, and I guess it's also because I haven't seen a lot of hospitalized patients before, but it is the reality that if they're unable to clean themselves, it is our job to help them with their feces and all sorts of things. So as they say, sometimes in certain units, nurses really can be glorified poop wipers, as they say. So yeah, I feel like that part struck me as the most surprising, just because you go to school and all these things. But in theory, you enter and a lot of nurses and care aides, they're very, 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 very tired and they're very overworked. They just simply do not have time to be extra nice and gentle to every single patient that they meet. So it's going to have to be really fast. They walk in and they say, "Hello, Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so. We're just going to give you a bath now, okay?" Take off their gowns. They're already crying and screaming because the patients, a lot of them may be confused and they don't like it. This is in a long-term care setting, by the way, so a lot of them had dementia and confusion. But sometimes you would be like, "Okay, no, 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 you got to sit on that toilet for longer," and you just leave them for another 5 to 10 minutes. They're screaming in the bathroom, so if other people saw, they would think there's something wrong. But no, this is just the way it's being done all the time. And it was very surprising to me because on textbook, we learned that, no, we learned care for the patients holistically and covenantally, and we care for every aspect of their souls and all that. But in reality, you have a lot of tasks to do, and you just can't attend to any of them. It was heartbreaking and surprising at the same time. What surprised me even more was how inhumane I was becoming over the years and how I was becoming desensitized to these things, which isn't great because I think it's good to remind yourself periodically that these are precious, precious human beings that you are being called to care for in your calling, like as a courier. But it is also just the reality that we're just at the forefront of all this receiving end when it's short-staffed, and the system may not always be at its best capacity, and there are a lot of patients with a lot of needs with less support, and we just have to take more patients and their needs than normal. So yeah, those were some really surprising and shocking things. And it is a sad truth that if the patient isn't alert and oriented enough, if the patient has dementia, if the family does not seem like they want the patient to be taken care of well, as in like there are some families who visit their moms and dads in nursing homes all the time, whereas there are some families that just do not visit their moms and dads for years and years and like for 3 years I've met a patient, their family did not visit. And at some point they requested that, hey, not that they requested, but I'm pretty sure a conversation about MAID has come up at some point, which was terrifying in my head. I'm not 100% sure of what the context was. But that being said, it's really interesting how a patient who is a whole human being can turn into a mere task to a point where they're barely alive and just barely holding on to their breaths. And if you accidentally, there's not much you can do for them at this point. Like, are they going to get better and go home? Or yeah, all of these things are really emotionally heavy and very, very surprising. And it shocked me the most in my first few years.
Yeah, I mean, I recently had an experience at the hospital about a month and a half ago. And when I went there and I actually experienced what nurses and doctors really experience in a day-to-day life, I really have a massive amount of respect for that profession. And I actually want to ask, this is more tailored towards the program itself, but at what year do you guys actually have access to real human patients?
Okay. So first year, it's mostly just you don't really have clinicals. First year, there are some clinical aspect, as in like there's community health. So I remember visiting schools and like teaching little kids how to wash their hands on a poster and like singing with them, things like that. Second year, first semester, you go on to long-term care, which is a lot of older adults. I find that it's likely the easiest place to practice because, again, there's nothing much you can do for them. You give them their meds, but not even a lot of the meds. And unfortunately, a lot of the long-term care patients' average stay is about 2 years. And after that, mostly of them pass away. So yeah. After that, second year, second semester is the med-surg semester. That's when everything comes together. So you learn, you take a course called pharmacology, you take medical surgical nursing, which is pathophysiology of all that. And it's really cool. That's when you learn how to give meds properly. That's when you learn how to how to actually do injections, hang IV meds if necessary, wound care. Yeah, second year, first semester when you learn all these things in theory. Second year, second semester is when you practice all these things in an actual hospital setting. So that was really cool. Third year, it's split into four units, I guess. So you start your first semester by doing by doing what was the first one? Oh yeah, I started by doing mental health, so psychiatric nursing. We had a 6-week psychiatric rotation in a psych ward. That was pretty cool, but it was also pretty scary for me. After that, we did community health. So that was like public health or home health, all these things included, which I really, really liked. I did my rotation in a school clinic, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but it was really cool. Afterwards, in the second semester, it's pediatrics rotation for 6 weeks. I did mine in BC Children's, and another 6-week rotation in maternity. So and giving birth, I did that in Surrey Memorial Family Birthing Unit. All these units provided us with such deep learning, and it was really cool. And if any students want to branch into specialties like pediatrics or maternity in this season, this is their time to experience it and go into it. So they sometimes end up taking an extra course from BCIT for about probably during the semester, I think. But yeah, so that was a really cool moment for all of us, I think, because we get to realize what's actually for us and what we might dislike, which is completely fine. We don't have to love everything. So, and our final year, fourth year, first semester surgical, which you see a lot of post-op and pre-op patients, which is before and after operations. And afterwards, fourth year, second semester. In our university, we do ethics and leadership in nursing for the first 3 weeks. And the last few months, it's 360 hours. So it's called preceptorship. And you are basically working the hospital full time, not being paid, but just so that you're able to consolidate your skills, get used to the full time nurse schedule, day, day, night, night. And once you're done with those 360 hours, that's when you complete your program.
In the hands-on experience that you did, let's say for surgical or for any experience that actually where you actually dealt with human patients, was there anything specific, whether it was an activity or a procedure, that you really had a difficult time doing? And how did you kind of overcome that?
I will say in nursing school, you learn, this is where the bed is supposed to be, this is where the equipment's supposed to be, and all that. And the reality is, you go into the hospital, sometimes they're missing equipment, so you have to make something up that, like, will hopefully be safe. A lot of the patients have a lot of their own items on the bed sometimes, or all over. And sometimes there has been a situation where I would go over to a patient and the patient just had a bowel movement, which means that they have pooped and you have to clean them up now. And you're trying to clean them up and you're done cleaning them up, only to realize that they have a pressure wound now because they've been sitting on the bed for too long. So now they're bleeding on their backs, like just above their bums. And now you have to clean that up on top of that. And when you're you think you're done cleaning, sometimes the patients don't have the best bowel control. It happens all over again. You have to clean them up all over again. So it just happens everywhere. And yeah, I would say personal care part is probably the hardest. Just because a lot of patients are also heavy, they cannot move themselves. You have to push them to one side of the bed so that you get to really be able to clean them up properly. Because again, they deserve to be very, very clean, even if they cannot clean themselves. So I still don't really enjoy doing a lot of self-care. Self-care as in like patient care. I enjoy it in a sense that I'm still taking care of them and that they appreciate it. But the work itself, I just find that I still fumble with it quite a bit, because what are you supposed to do when everything around you is so dirty and you need to go change gloves? Your patient's screaming because he's hurting, and I feel terrible because I don't want to hurt him. But at the same time, his wound is open and I have to clean that up. On top of that, they're still having trouble dealing with their bowel control. So many things happening and all at the same time. And the call bell's ringing, and other patients are also crying and all these things. So yeah, I'd say, if somebody says, oh, so-and-so had a BM, then it's an automatic groan for a lot of patients. I mean, for a lot of nurses, I think, because it's it seems insignificant, but it's also the hardest thing to do, in my opinion.
I want to clarify some things. So is there a difference between like the impractice of, you know, dealing with actual human patients. And then you said surgical and then receptorship. Is that what you said?
Preceptorship. Yeah.
Okay. So is there a difference between all those things? Is that all part of the curriculum? And is it done? Does the institution kind of help you with that? Or is it kind of an independent thing where you have to find those jobs and internships? How is that process
like? So the school places us in different areas, which is pretty cool. Back when I was doing med-surg, so second year, second semester, a lot of the times, it really depends on the patient's needs. If the patients are elderly and if they're more sick, it's likely that they need a lot of personal care, like going to the bathroom and all that. You might need to wheel them in a wheelchair, put them on the toilet, raise them up from the toilet and put them back in the wheelchair, all these things. Surgical, a lot of the surgery patients who qualify enough to have a surgery are most likely healthy. So a lot of them may have, sometimes they might have a Foley catheter on, which is it's supposed to deal with their urine. Other than that, surgical patients are mostly a lot healthier and they're mostly recovering. So you just have to make sure that their pain is managed. The focus of these patients' care plans are a lot different, I'd say. And yeah, we didn't really have to find the hospitals ourselves. The school matches us with them. We're grouped in about 6 students, and we have a clinical instructor who will be on site watching over us, making sure we're doing okay. We are given about 1 or 2 patients to start with, and then by the end of the rotation, we can handle about 2 to 3 if we'd like. Yeah, that's what it was like for us. Yeah.
Could you briefly describe a good day and a bad day in that surgical experience?
Sure. A good day would be when I get my patients a lot, and my patients are mostly nice people. I talk to them and they're very pleasant and they take their meds all right. And everything about them just seems to be going fine. If they are ready to be discharged either by tomorrow, that's great, because now you actually enjoy spending time with them like a little bit. And they're a lot. Yeah, if we have nice patients, we mostly have a good day. And also a day where I don't end up making any mistakes as a student, which is pretty frequent because I think all students make mistakes at clinical at some point. But any mistake you make in clinical, other than like, this is different from other jobs, because other jobs you make a mistake and you're like, you know what, I could have messed up. But this job training, because we're dealing with human lives, we make a mistake and we think, oh no, I could have almost killed that patient if I had done something else wrong. So in that sense, it's really important to just keep yourself grounded. Yeah. So that would be a good day. A bad day is the opposite of that, where your patients are not nice to you. They're yelling at you. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. And a lot of the times, like, difficult patients are, like, not easy to deal with. Sometimes if your primary nurse, who's supposed to be taking care of the patients themselves, if they're not very nice to you, I've had an experience where a primary nurse was not very nice to me. She didn't like that she had a student to supervise. And I think, and which I understandable, you're stressed and you're, all these things are happening. But yeah, or if you forget something and your primary nurse tells you, hey, you forgot this, you shouldn't have done this, or all these things. So yeah, a day full of criticism coming from patients, your supervisors, I would say that's a pretty bad day, because now you feel like you haven't done a lot of things well. You're worried that your supervisor might fail you from that clinical rotation for making certain mistakes, which, no, I was never failed from a clinical supervisor for that, those type of reasons, obviously. But you just sort of find yourself overthinking, wondering what you're doing, hoping that they won't fail you for certain things. So yeah, those would be some good days and bad days in contrast. Yeah, hopefully that makes sense.
I have a question about the patients. So when you're assigned patients, does it change day by day, or are you assigned a specific number of patients where you deal with for a prolonged period of time?
Mm. So that also depends on the ward. If it's long-term care, you're just assigned whoever, because like a lot of the patient's conditions are pretty much the same. Med-surg wise, there were some patients who stayed there for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we got to see the same patient over and over again. That was pretty cool. Some of the patients do get discharged on the day of, so that was cool. Pediatrics, sometimes you rarely get assigned the same patient, because the clinical would be on every Fridays from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., which means that by the time you come back the next week, they're not there anymore, likely. If they are, then hopefully it's likely a longer stay for them and their condition's a lot more acute or a lot more serious. In that case, they might not give the patient to a student at all. Yeah, a lot of the patients that I've had, I never got to see them again, especially in maternity, because in maternity, you mostly just give birth and leave the next day or two. So, yeah.
I think this is a great way to talk about the topic of perspective. And so you having, I'm assuming you've been a patient before in any setting, whether it was catching a cold, getting a prescription, and now you know what it's like to be on the other side. Is there anything that you've learned, whether it's, you know, being a patient or being in the medical profession that you didn't know before?
Huh. I will say, and if by all honesty, just because I've had a medical professional, as my father has been in a medical field, a lot of the things just went through him. I would just tell him, hey, this is what I'm dealing with, and he would bring something. So a lot of the times I didn't really have to go to the hospital. He would tell me what his experiences with some patients are like. But a lot of the times, and when I go to the hospital, I wouldn't be surprised if like people were extra nice to me saying that, oh, that is Dr. So-and-so's daughter. So I would say that I was definitely privileged to have received a vast amount of access to healthcare in that way. So I don't know what it's like to be a patient who has never dealt with anything like that before. That one time when I went to a random hospital when I was attending boarding school, when I was about 15 or 16, my parents were not around. I went to a random hospital and the doctor looked like he didn't want to deal with me. That was that one time. And I was thinking, oh dear, wow, okay. So, but yeah, being on the other side, that being said, and having that middle ground perspective is interesting because I've been a patient once. I've also been seeing things from my dad's side of point of view, where I'm learning a lot of things from his end. And then I'm in the middle area where I'm the direct contact between the patients and the doctor, basically. The doctor orders things and we carry out those orders to the patients. I see the gravity of how important it is to properly carry out those orders, really. And to, yes, you say that it is okay to make mistakes and all that, but it is not okay to make mistakes over and over again when they are not being fixed. It's completely fine to make mistakes, but it's really important that you learn from those mistakes, which is why I think it is important to let go of that fragile perfectionist mentality. If you have a fragile perfectionist mentality, what will end up happening is you'll start thinking, oh no, that was not me. I will never make that mistake ever, ever, ever again. Well, how are you going to do that? You could make that mistake in the future as well. What are some steps you will take to make sure that you don't make those mistakes? Are you going to leave a sticky note on your own? Are you going to create a Google Doc, just a spreadsheet of all of your mistakes and and your strategy for like remedial, hopefully. So yeah. And also just the importance of just an extra smile to the patients. I can see that it just really goes a long way. And I find that I'm getting desensitized as I go and just not wanting to give an extra smile, but I still do anyways. I really just pray to myself every single day that I'm able to see human beings in their most precious beings, even if they are being sick and even if they're at their lowest point of their lives. Yeah.
All right. To conclude with my questions, what would you say is probably one of the most valuable skills that you developed through nursing school, and maybe one valuable lesson as well that you learned?
A valuable skill would be note-taking. So during especially like maybe the first few days of any clinical setting, it's orientation. So I take notes about everything. I take notes about what a unit's specific norms are like. Some units might do things this way. Some units might not. Some units might say, okay, chart it this way, and this makes the most sense to all the other nurses who will be taking over this patient. So just making really, really, really good detailed notes and asking good questions too. Those things would be the skills that I've developed in nursing. And also just talking to patients, but also being able to develop professional boundaries with them. I do have a therapeutic relationship with my patients, but it can never turn into a social relationship unless there are other situations that warranted it to be. So I would never be exchanging like much of my personal information with the patients unless I feel like it's necessary just for professional collaboration. Those would be some skills that soft skills that I just learned after talking to patients. What would be like a life lesson? Again, I keep saying this over and over again, but fragile perfectionist mentality does not help. If I'm willing to learn, I have to accept that I will be a lifelong learner and that I will always be forgetting things, which is why I need to brush up on those skills again if I need to. Look up extra information, ask for help, which I find are really necessary things. If I want to be a good nurse who will eventually serve really, really well to their patients. Yeah. And really just be able to love them well and provide the best solution possible for them.
All right. Thank you so much, Jessica. For the last couple of minutes of this show, I have a very small game segment I do with a lot of my guests, if not all of my guests. But what's going to happen is I'm going to give you a couple questions that are would you rather questions. And so they're nice and easy and funny. And so all I need you to do is answer these questions or pick one of the answers in a very, very fast pace. Cool?
Okay. All right.
All right. So the first one is, would you rather be able to breathe underwater but only remember conversations spoken while submerged, or fly at walking speed but forget every dream you ever had?
Fly at walking speed? Hold on. Walk at flying speed?
Fly at walking speed.
Fly at walking speed while forgetting every dream I had.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That seems like a more doable one. I do not like holding my breath for whatever reason.
Okay. Would you rather have a fridge that magically refills with any snack you crave, but it whispers embarrassing secrets to visitors, or a closet that gives you perfect outfits daily, but only if you sing your thoughts aloud while dressing?
Oh, a closet. I sing my thoughts aloud while dressing all the time. Yeah.
That's great. I think I like the fridge, but maybe if I want to get better addressing, the closet might be a good choice. I mean, considering the closet has very good fashion sense. But okay, so you would choose the closet.
Yeah.
All right.
I talk to myself all the time anyway, so why not? Yeah.
Okay, the next one is, would you rather time travel once a year to a random decade for 24 hours or be able to pause time for 5 minutes every day but sneeze glitter every time you do?
Time travel at some point just to see what it was like. Yeah, it would be really cool to even just to time travel to see those that you miss or things that we miss. Yeah, so yeah, that would be pretty cool, I think. Yeah.
All right. The next one is, would you rather be able to swap bodies with any animal once a week or have the power to animate inanimate objects for 5 minutes a day?
So what does it look like to animate inanimate objects?
So it's like, you know, like cartoon characters?
Okay.
Okay, so you're kind of making like a real thing into like an animated thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I see what you
mean. But you're doing it to something. So you have the power to do that instead of you yourself being an animate object.
Okay. Probably the first one. Yeah, I want to switch bodies with my dog. That would be cool.
Yeah. Okay, so it's like animate is kind of bringing something to life.
Okay,
like bringing something to life.
Yeah. Okay,
so like the teapots in, you know, Beauty and the Beast, those would be animate objects.
Okay,
it's like making those. Okay, the last one I have for you is, would you rather remember everything you've ever read but never be able to reread anything, or only understand books the second time you read them?
Oh, obviously the first one. That way I won't have to reread it. It'll still live rent-free in my brain.
All right.
Yeah, that would have been come in handy for nursing school exams, yeah.
Okay, that's it for today's show. Thank you, Jessica, for coming on. You were great. I hope you had some fun. Just any 1-2-sentence remarks for future aspiring nursing students for you to end off?
People think being a nurse is like a huge, huge, huge deal. And it is a huge deal. I'm not trying to minimize it in any way. But I just want people to know that it's anybody can be a nurse. And there, while there is that like TikTok meme about like a certain mold of nurse you have to be, there is a nurse who's a mom. There's a nurse who has massive ADHD and forgets everything. There are a lot of nurses out there. And every version of their nurse is so unique. And I know everyone can be a great, great nurse. So if you're interested and if you don't think you're a great fit, well, everybody can be a great fit into nursing. So good luck with that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much again, Jessica, for coming on. And I hope you guys all have a wonderful week. It seems like the sun is out once again. So go outside, enjoy the sun, and I'll see you guys tomorrow, actually, at 10 a.m. Bye-bye, everyone.